Heather June Gibbons. Okay.
Thank you, Steve, for having me. And MK, that was so beautiful. It's tough to follow. I was just so enraptured and listening that I'm like, oh, I have to actually read now. Yeah, lots to think about. Okay, I have to do my thing and this thing. Hold on a second. This thing. And... it looked so easy when you were doing... there we go. Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to be reading from this collection. It just came out at the end of June, so still pretty new. And the book is in, it's called Her Mouth is Souvenir, and it's in three sections. So I'll read some poems from each section and maybe say something, I don't know. Sometimes I don't really know what to say about them. I'll start at the beginning. Smell the moxie. My project is plain persistence. Self as spatula scraping self as burned crud off skillet. Pretend research in a field of forget-me-nots sprayed with real pesticides. Grief that never gets past bargaining. The whole what if and if only. Elaborate mazes out of wet cardboard. A little cologne for the armpits. We're talking real Band-Aid solutions here. A jerry-rigged screen door on a sagging front porch where a man with a shotgun across his knees is sleeping. An outboard motor that starts up about every umpteenth yank, but only when you choke it. I have this habit of breaking keys off in locks. Drawer knobs come off in my hands. Slobber dries on my thighs. When I say doing okay, I mean an ongoing white knuckling. When I ask how you are, I hear furnace, then praxis, think wax, expats, and other kinds of justice tell you can't, have to walk my hair and wash the dog, key my own car, then drive it through a wall. Pennies over my eyes and still this throb in my trousers. Not a pretty place. Left to my own devices, I play until they break. I keep turning this roll of invisible tape, hoping to catch an edge I can peel from. Who wants to see my discursive knees? Cordon the fire lane, adjust the thermostat, squeeze out the very last dab of paste. When I say take a stab, I mean get a grip, meaning grasp, meaning straws. There's a lot of anxiety in this book. And I've had the weird experience of reading for the first time my own reviews, just really in the last like week and a half, really. But anxiety is a word that's come up consistently. They've all been very nice, but yeah, so it's true. There's anxiety in the book, there's anxiety in me, there's anxiety in you. And that's all right. Exploded view. Etched into each fallen leaf is a diagram of a bare tree. Things come with their own directions. They tell us what we are about to see will likely appear senseless. We say we want no part in it, but no one hears us fall in the woods. We stagger around with the sound off, the sky a pale bruise, burst capillaries in our cheeks recording force. The way a horizontal cross-section reveals growth rings in a tree. We are told no one was harmed in the making of. The shattered window mirrors sugar glass, but I felt the floor quake. I saw a woman's skin lit like a lamp. I remember driving under a blue bridge. Later, I will produce a histogram of the image to better manipulate the colors. A somewhat random sample of 100 observations from the normal distribution, shards of ice angled on the creek breaking against each other. We hadn't seen anything of this magnitude before, except for the time the hounds found the wounded elk. Blood in the snow, a red telephone, and a black telephone in the snow. Then a spotted orchid. What I am showing you is the exploded view. Cracked birdbath in the snow, fallen tree monographed by a noted dendrologist. His children, heirs to his headaches, will remember how he squinted at the page, his papers thawing in spring to the contours of bark. Dendrologist. I didn't know that word, and someone was reading that poem, a draft, and said, you should make him a dendrologist. I said, I don't know what that is. It's like a tree scientist. So I learned a new word. Maybe you did too. Dendrologist. Now let's see. Folk song. Since they detangled the wires under my hair and took out the bad parts, not even the bending of light saddens me. I see a family glisten on the bay in a white sailboat and perch a while, invisible, eavesdropping on their inner peace. A bluefin tuna blurs by, an immense iridescence with an underbite. My mouth is wired to a trigger point on the sole of my right foot. Press it and I say the funniest things. Hiss, hiss go the dog-faced snakes in the vault. Here, kitty, kitty, goes the little engine that could. When I say she snapped, I mean she danced like a suspension bridge in an earthquake, fell into the strait, felt her neck give, was left beheaded in a beaded dress with shoulder pads and a stain. What does it mean when a chain store flies its logoed flag at half-mast? He shook his fist and laughed at me. I regained consciousness. Even air has its blackouts. Think of the 100-year infestation, the sky a densely pixelated net of buzz. Spores travel faster than I can sing. The scanner mistakes a throat singer for a bomb. The singer stabs himself in the heart. The scanner jumps off a bridge. Toot toot goes the little kid with his arm, hoping the long-haul trucker will oblige. On the stereo, a Bulgarian folk song about two shepherds buried alive inside a mountain plays on. Okay, so I was raised in the LDS church, the Mormon church. And there's not a lot explicitly about that in the book, but this is one poem that does get a little close to talking about some of that. It's called My People. My people are invisible. They are all around me. There is no one else. I wander these rooms. I walk on frozen ridges of mud and under the boughs of blighted hardwoods. Still, they whisper, with all the leaves gone, you can really see the ground. My people walked over mountains and buried children on the trail for a prophet who led them to a lake of salt. Now they polish the temple in their secret clothes. For my people are luminous. Though I can't see them, they whisper, you owe us. forgive me. For I went to the woods hoping to catch leaves as they fell and woke up in the den with Grandma and Fox News. Maybe it's the clarity of a fever that I miss. Or maybe I really do believe. Maybe the hell I believe in has degrees. This book coincidentally won an award through the University of Utah Press, which is where the Mormons are, and I have a lot of family there, and I'm gonna, you know, I mean, I'm almost 41, but I'm still terrified to read some of these poems in front of my family. I believe my grandmother may actually be there, so I'm not gonna be reading that one. It's like certain ways we never grow up, you know. I won't read any of the ones with profanity. Oh, I will. Okay. Let's see. For a while, I was going to the acupuncturist a lot. I found a good deal, and it was amazing.
Tiny needles?
Tiny needles.
Is that the place?
No, no, a different place. But I'm like, yeah, those are the ones. They're pretty tiny. Actually, I had a really weird experience because they were doing filming a commercial that was going to be shown on local cable TV, which I never, well, I don't watch TV. And she asked if I'd be okay if they filmed it. So I was on, that should be its own poem, but I was on the table and she, you know, we're doing the thing. And they're filming it. I thought, this is really not relaxing at all. Like they had lights and everything. And she's like, so just relax and we'll be back in a few minutes. And then the guy was still there with the camera. I'm like, I'm laying here motionless. Like, what, why do you need to be here? I never saw it either. I hope nobody did. Never agree to that, ever. Self-portrait as tongue. When the acupuncturist examines the film on my tongue, I'm afraid she'll see I'm prone to night sweats and sobbing at the dolphin show. I hate the way they're made to do tricks for food as if they were simple humans with fantasies of interspecies friendship. The acupuncturist nods, says I run hot in the head and torso. Basically, my meridians are fucked. In California, roses bloom in winter and plaques announce their breeding names like racehorses. Dark Lady, Crimson Glory, then it's Moondance for the win. In an ad for gin, a woman in a leopard coat walks a ferret on a leash. No, the woman is on a leash in a leotard in an ad for what, I don't know. Worrying generates heat, which shows up as deep red at the tip of the tongue, the only muscle in the body not covered by skin and therefore very telling. A strange kind of stress, waving my hands back and forth in front of a touch-free dispenser waiting for its sensor to sense me. A strange kind of convenience to access at the tap of a fingertip so much information without the ability to understand it. Cataract means flawed vision, but also waterfall, cascade. Dolphins only seem to smile as the trainer commands them to jump so high they splash the front row in what will be their fifth show of the day. They can think of the future, but can they also choose not to? The audience erupts in applause. I stick out my tongue and say, ah. I didn't even start my timer. That was useful. Okay. All right. This is the last poem in this section, Crossing. I do not name, nor do I whisper after dark. In not naming, I call out in hopes of being called. I am the frame of a frosted window smeared by hands, the window of a night fairy. Dark water moves in me, and passengers stream sternward through the gnarls of my hair. I press my face to the glass, cup my hands to form a seal, and all reflection is gone. Relief, a darkness so complete, it diminishes water and sky to flatness, an absence against which a few gulls drift backwards. The second section has a lot of love poems and a lot of poems that have the same title, which is Sore Song. And there's a lot about, well, they're love poems, but they're not necessarily, they're not really to anyone in particular. It's more about desire and about longing itself as an energy, thinking about Eros as an animating force. Here's the first one, Sore Song. Eros, you are so personless and difficult. You hamstring us, string us up, and make us want to want only you. Desire, dedicated to desire. The poison mandrake roots and blooms and catches fire. Your port barely conceals the everlasting, never enough. You are both ambulance and chaser, stinger and the stung, swollen welt and stinky balm. For you, we get lashed to the mast. For you, we do the singing. So far gone. I don't know anything about the speed of sound except that subsonic and supersonic sound like garage rock, and maybe something about waves, the way sound changes over distance, marred by a million echoes, scraped smooth as beach glass through invisible interactions with space. The most beautiful songs are the ones you can barely hear because they are so far away. So far, so gone, which is the sound of foghorns on the Golden Gate intoning their own requiem, with each delayed two-tone as satellite-guided GPS may soon eliminate the need for them. I wonder what interval that is in music theory, which I flunked freshman year. Foghorns, Golden Gate with light traffic noise is a sound effect you can buy online, and it's weird to hear it at the bus stop on a morning with perfect skies, everyone looking around to see whose phone that is. We are lonely. Even the foghorn itself is now automated. A laser beam shot out to sea, a sensor that talks to a computer, like most people. The sound of the foghorn is determined by the landscape through which it must travel, often overwhelming in extreme close-up, though dear when heard from far away. I didn't warn you that there would be singing in that one. Sore Song. I woke from a dream about rationing and meat, rotting in a storage locker, and knew I was lonely. All I wanted was to kiss on a sparse late train, dark platforms, flickering, nothing fancy, just to unravel. So I mistook the employee for a mannequin. Sometimes I still mistake statues for men who remember me. I miss your slanted heart. Please send a graph of its irregularities, some proof you haven't forgotten, how your fingers felt in my mouth, the way you hooked into me. Maybe you were just some metal flashing in the sun. But I don't want to drive back to the subdivision, blubbering like a radio cliche. All the days, blank panels waiting to be narrated. Some echo in a tunnel, some junk to delete. Let me show you how it feels to feel we deserve anything like love. Just one more of these, also called Source Song. Some of them are, I think, more sincere, like that one was probably the closest to being sincere. But some of them are in this voice that is just, it's just extra, you know? Like almost, intentionally, kind of over the top. Just thinking about, not facetiously, but a kind of like exaggerated version of a desiring voice. This one's kind of like that. Hey you, turn in that sonar. Come on down with your fanged kiss. Bow rosined and held aloft. Ascot crooked but rakishly so. How I've missed scanning the horizon for you. Wary of parallax. Decadent the way it screws with the curves. I need your thumbprint on me in glitter or in ash. I looked for you in bulk bins of star anise, in the creases of bus seats, in strange twangs and interstate clovers, mistook you for other pangs and baubles, and lay a while panting in your shadow, laid wait in stairwells and in the body's many clefts, whispered for you parched. Once thought I saw you through a guitar pick's tortoiseshell, once caught a glimpse of the hem of your robe. I sensed you with my high-powered sensor. I orbited you. I probed. And now I see your massive eye blink against the bars of the cage as my vessel pulls closer, risking burn-up for data. Okay, and then I'll read some from the last section. Thanks for being such wonderful listeners. They're really good listeners. I think. You're so quiet. Passengers. Sashimi grade and days old, we were slashed like prices for the card-carrying member. Now we operate mostly with the safety on. Told to handle it, so we handle it. Crickets burn in their customary fervor, but transposed up a key and sharper. We resist the urge to sand it down so smooth we sand right through it. Solicitors queue up and there's nobody home to hide from them. The blinking clock bespeaks the digital redness we are feeling. In the marginalia, a child holds your hand and counts to three before jumping into the sidewalk chalk drawing. Our connection was running so slow, we had to think between pages loading. Dogs circled, pointy as sharks. It was autumn, and porch rails ensnared in poison oak turned glamorous. We too used to work in shifts. We want something scalable, less whirling. The meds keep us even, but we miss desire. The dream was so bad it woke me. I was holding myself, like the stabbing realization of loss anticipated. Rip the two-by, grease the jigsaw. All night, jets pace the sky. Where are they going? Uh, this is my nature poem. Well, it's called Nature. And I was thinking about, I have a few students here who are in my nature poetry class. Thinking about MK's reading and also just the way that we anthologize, the way we personify nature as female and the different ways that she is personified and just thinking about it a little differently, my own way of thinking about it. Nature. Hers is a callousness we wish for in odd moments of the night. She is a steering wheel in the desert, dark accelerator in the database, young enough to remember lasers, yet empty enough to hold all of us. She rubs vaporous ointment on our balsa chests and gives us just enough time to forget what we have wasted. So we worship her charismatic megaparticles with sweet miscalculations. Imagine her ear as canticle, her eyelash as necklace. When she brandishes her prosthesis, hydrogen blooms its elephantasis. Our name tags say we are sympathetic. A lazy cross breeze cools the backs of our legs, and still this minivan with the flat black side panel has no muffler. What could the maimed want from us? We who made piano wire. We who were born on the eve of appetite on the wings of Saturday night and will pay for it with blue tongue slurpees and plastic Lays. What a racket she makes. Imagine her cerebellum as a flea circus and ruby-throated hummingbirds halt their migration. Imagine 16 different possible futures for wildfires, her mouth as a literal souvenir, and she mutates the gross mammalian heart, comes unhinged, mascara ruining her cheeks as she screams, "Don't you walk away from me, you bastard," and flings her red shoe, narrowly missing the back of some guy's head. It's like nature as a hot mess and a force. Okay. Vantage. It begins with a prick at the ankle. The maple tree buds false in the bare copse. Bodies roll out of cargo bays wrapped in flags. Nothing could prepare us for this. There is a curvature. We shrink to depict distance. A dead finch wings by in the dirt by the grace of maggots' invisible strings. When does refraction turn myopic? When it impairs normal functioning. Who determines that? We do. Liberally, we apply the poultice as fireflies blip in the periphery like dizzy stars in brief moments of oxygen deprivation. The flatter the painting, the more we marvel. We can't help it. It reminds us of children who draw what they don't understand. Far from the vanishing point, they grow. By what means? I don't know, but I've been walking for days. I'll just read two more, if that's all right. The green rose up. It didn't matter that we wore our silver suits. Cities welled up and were overwhelmed. The green kept rising until we waded in algae. And at night, a phosphorescent bloom lit the pathways our limbs had traveled and pocked the surface of the water with sparks. Inland sycamores gnarled towards the bank. We banged on the doors of the institution, but nobody heard us. We tipped our hats, then crumpled them in our hands, did a little soft shoe without knowing what we were asking for. the green rose up, and we couldn't see past it. Vines covered the brick debris, a pheasant nested in the high grass of the raised block, and all around us was condemnation and vacancy. So we left the city. We left our clothes. We lined up at the agency and spoke only of our strengths and not of the law that keeps us upright in the rotor ride ironed to a curve. When we say we want to live in the moment, what we mean is we want not to want an impossible future. To be conscious of every breath is to be unable to think of anything else, which is to say, happier. And I'll end with something slightly more upbeat than that. Slightly. The brain may disassemble itself in sleep. Every night, neural connections unravel a little as your mind edits itself and resets, making way for recently formed memories to replay and become more sharply etched. You dream of a lanky lawyer in a flawless dress shirt who smells faintly of hotel lobby and of ham. Not to mention the dream about teeth. Julia says teeth mean control, but you're pretty sure they mean death. Either way, it's not good to dream about your mother in the tall, wet grass, her arms folded as if to say, "What are you waiting for?" And when Julia appears in tattered lace with a green ribbon around her wrist and tells you her terrible secret, you are happy because she finally told you what you already knew. It is not enough to say we are transparent things. The captain cracks his knuckles over the intercom. The sun sets in the cracks of a haggard snowy peak, while wildfires in the west rage against the blowing dust advisory. Every September, the Arctic ground squirrel burrows beneath the tundra to curl up in a nest of lichen and caribou hair. Its heart slows, its lungs slow, its temperature dips below freezing, and electrical signals vanish in many areas of its brain. But don't worry. Soon it will awaken and return to the surface of the earth, hungry and eager to mate, just as you will wake up with creases on your face on a plane still circling airspace, waiting for permission to land. Just in time to see clouds unraveling magenta, your brain nicely blank, but for vague pulses of light. Thank you.